Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions on the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, NOAH, DDT, All Japan, Marigold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network today.
How's it going, everyone? This is Fred Moreland here on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy, your Voices of Wrestling AEW-specific podcast. I am without my co-host today, Tyler Fornes. He has better things to be doing. I don't want to air his business, but it is better. So, no offense. Now, it's been a couple weeks since we did our show after All In, so a couple things have happened with the AE dubs. But, you know, let's just talk about what is going on in the grand scheme of things. I think we have to talk about this WWE ESPN deal, because I think if you're Tony Khan, you got to be concerned about this. Pretty good. It's a big issue. And I think this kind of points towards what is really an issue with AEW, which is a lack of structure, I guess, or maybe a lack of administrative manpower. I listened to this week's flagship, and I agree a lot with what Joe Lanza's got to say. I'm not going to just repeat what he said word for word. That's not what you guys are looking for. But I do think if you're Tony Khan, you've got to be very concerned about the fact that the WWE has all these deals going on right now. And that one has to assume there is a exclusivity aspect to them, blocking these companies from signing with other wrestling companies. And that's bad news for AEW, because what that means is, you know, AEW is unable to sign deals with all these companies that WWE is currently in bed with. And obviously, as I go tippy-tap on the Google, you know, between Peacock, Netflix, the CW, USA Network, I mean, and ESPN now, it's not good. Not good at all that these are the groups that WWE is partnered with, and that probably means that AEW can't partner with any of them. So the real concern would be when it's contract renegotiation time with Dynamite, or if you want to get Ring of Honor ever on TV, or Shockwave, remember that. If you want to get any of that stuff on the air, well, that's a bunch of companies right there that you can't even talk with, apparently. One would presume. I am presuming that all of these have exclusivity, because that is the norm. So that's going to limit how much money you can make. And considering that, it's a bad time for AEW, or it could be a bad time in the future. And I think another underreported aspect of it is the fact that WWE is coming in and getting these big money deals with all these broadcasters, you know, for Peacock and Fox. Remember when SmackDown was on there, and Netflix now. And now ESPN. Well, we are now at 2 for 2 on companies having the right to match these offers and saying, I'm good. Fox had that opportunity, and they were like, eh, we don't need SmackDown anymore. And Peacock had an opportunity, I believe I saw earlier, to match the ESPN offer. And they said, no, thank you. So, you know, it's easy to look at that and say, well, you know, that's all they need. That's all WWE needs, is just to get the deal in the first place. Yes, but also, you know, I think it's a little concerning for them, because what if you go back around and negotiate with these guys and, you know, they decide that what they paid previously was nowhere worth it? You know, are they going to be like, oh, we'll just offer it right back to you? I don't think so. Why would you do that if you're a large conglomerate? But I also think it's concerning for AEW. Now, I think a big part of AEW's marketing position should be to, you know, just kind of be like, hey, look, we're an alternative and we're far more cost effective. You should give us a, you know, throw us some cash. But my, you know, I think that they should be concerned that WWE is leaving all these companies, you know, disappointed with the business they've had. And as such, that when those companies turn around and negotiate with AEW, they just don't want to pay the money. I think that's a major concern. So in two ways, that could be very bad for AEW. But it does seem to be an issue stemming from a lack of focus or manpower or whatever you want to call it when it comes to these kind of PR things. And, you know, linking back to, I've talked about this before on the show, but linking back to the peak of like Legendtel-like activity, if you will, on social media, when these outlets would just randomly get, you know, Fast Nationals that made AEW look bad and just dutifully report them, and one presumes from those numbers came from WWE. It became its whole little thing. But at the same time, you know, what's wild to me is, as an AEW-focused podcast on, you know, the Voices of Wrestling Network is not nothing. I'm not going to sit here and pretend, you know, it's like I'm on something that matters, but, you know, something, like I should say, boy, I'm good at talking today, something massive, but, you know, it is wild to me that we don't even get a form response from AEWPR when we have issued questions to them before. Like, not a second of the day. Nothing. So, who cares? You know, and it's not so much about how dare they leave us out of this. You know, like, me personally, like, I'm not put off by that. But the thing that I think is interesting is there is apparently no, sorry, bad with phone. I'm on a tear right now of knocking out of the park. That there's apparently like no effort to do PR work, and given all the resources Tony Khan has available to him, it seems foolish to me to not spend more money on that. But I think that's a massive area where they are in danger of losing more and more ground to WWE, and it's something that they need to really step up their efforts on. But that's just my take on that. I mean, they've got to be concerned about this. They got to really think about the changing landscape and how that's affecting everything and how that could affect AEW in the future. And I hope that they do, because of the two products, I find one a lot better. And it's not WWE. Short of that, as far as big news for AEW, I think it's been a fairly quiet week. Jim Ross says that his contract is coming up, hopes to get an extension. Why not? I complained about him when he was working every week back in 2021 or whatever, and audibly did not care about the product. Like, that was not good. But, I mean, he's Jim Ross. I still think he had some gravitas to big events, big shows, big matches. I like his usage in general these days, and I think that they should continue to use him in that manner. I think he add something of value to the production, to the company. And, you know, I don't think I always agree with everything he's doing, but, or with, you know, with his opinions, I should say, all the time, but, you know, he's Jim Ross, you know, he's such a legend. He's still a good commentator at points, so I keep him around for sure. And what he does as an announcer is unique, I think, within announcers today. I don't think anyone comes close to doing what Jim Ross on a good day does. Some health notes from AEW. Buddy Matthews is going to undergo surgery. He had an ankle injury back in February, but his ankle did not heal like he hoped. So now in August, 6 months later, he is going to have surgery. So sucks that it's taken this long. I don't know what you do with Buddy Matthews at this point in time. I feel like the whole House of Black thing without Malakai Black and with Julie Hart and Brody King being split off is over, essentially. He could be linked up with the scary goth women group, I guess, but honestly, I just think he should be moved in a different direction, and I don't know if that direction is in AEW. I don't see an obvious spot where he slots right in. And I think if you go up and down the roster, there's a number of people that you could argue should be given priority over him in the booking, to the point that I don't know what his long-term outlook is. That's just my take there. But wishing the best for his health. We also got Dustin Rhodes getting double knee replacement surgery. Great to put the TNT title on someone needing that. But maybe put three championships on someone needing that. But he is getting that done in a couple weeks. They'll put him on the shelf for a while. Hoping the best for his health as well. I mean, Dustin can still go pretty well when his legs work. I think he still adds value to the company. Hopefully he recovers well and, you know, gets back. And finally, in the triumvirate of health news, I believe, Eddie Kingston is training for a return to the ring. We'll see when that happens. Broke his leg and various other awful things. Torn meniscus and ACL, God bless, last May. He's been out since. I think he's fantastic. I look forward to his return. Hope that he's able to get the mobility that he needs to stay at the level performer he is. Then there's a little bit of AEW drama with MVP and supposedly that he refused to have the Hurt Business drop the tag titles to Jet Knight, Mike Bailey, or Jet Speed, sorry, gosh, Kevin Knight and Mike Bailey. I'm not particularly heartbroken over that not being the move. I feel like it was an option, but not like a necessity for them to do that. So I think that it's pretty reasonable for the company to not have made that move at that point in time. I do think there's a concern about, you know, just how much veto power they are giving MVP / the Hurt Business, how true this reporting is. I don't envision the Hurt Business as a big time successful main event act in AEW. I think AEW style has a certain working standard, and I honestly don't think Lashley or Benjamin are at that level. That's not to say they're bad. I think Lashley's pretty decent these days, and I think Shelton's good. But I kind of group Shelton in terms of entering around the Dustin Rhodes level. And you don't want to be the old company. You don't want to be the company that just has a main event scene filled with people that have been around forever. So, you know. Now, there is a report that they said they would rather lose those belts to the Gates of Agony, the Outrunners, or Private Party. You might notice a theme with those three teams in that they all lost earlier to the Hurt Syndicate. I don't know. It's a question of how accurate this is and how much faith to put into it and all that, but I just think it's not a path you want to head down. And then afterwards, Mike Bailey and MVP did a video where as part of Speedball's vlog, where they joked about it, telling each other to go F themselves. And teasing on this, I don't know how true it is. But there's a lot of talk about it, and I think, I'm personally a believer, and when there's a lot of smoke, maybe there's a fire there. It's just something to think about. Okay, this week's Dynamite, I thought was a pretty solid show. All in all, I thought there were good promos on it, good matches. A lot of people really liked that Young Bucks tag match. I thought it was great. I thought it was like 4.25 stars, I think it was, but I wouldn't go any higher on it. Just a little too much haha in it for me to be like a great match. I think the FDR Stokely Hathaway act is a very good one. I feel like the whole Adam Copeland's going to wrestle Stokely thing is rushed. That's a payoff when you've got a lot of heat on a manager, specifically from one worker, and I just don't feel like there's been enough interactions to justify this. It feels like they're really just rushing that, but yeah, I'm sure they'll set up something, and then Christian Cage will come out and do part of the face turn. Swerve Strickland cut a great promo, and so did Mark Briscoe, and also MJF. Shocking, I know. Those three all cut very good stuff. Very good promos. I thought it was great stuff. Listen to the flagship. I heard Lanza talk about how he thinks Mark Briscoe is underutilized. He is. He should be like a top of the card heel. What am I saying? Face. God. But he should be a top of the card guy. He is a fantastic baby face. The crowd gets invested into him every time he's out there. And they should prioritize him more in the company. As far as actual matches, I thought the main event, MJF, Frisco, was pretty good. But again, I was sure wouldn't sit here and tell you that it's like a must-watch or any kind of classic or anything like that. It was just a nice TV match. And, it's nice to have a nice TV match. So, I like the opener. I thought that was a good match between Moxley and Mike Bailey. Bailey's, obviously set up as like a meaningful mid-carder. Not a main eventer, but, a regular mid-carder. Or a regular in the mid-carder, I should say. Like a guy who can be a threat to the top guys, but ends up losing all the time, I really enjoyed that match. I thought it worked really well. Went 4 stars on it. Mentioned the Young Bucks and Brodito, I guess they're calling themselves. Bandito and Brody King. Thought that was a great match. Best match of the night. The women's four-way was... I would have done everything in my power to keep Starks and Sky Blue away from working with each other. I just would not have booked the match to have that happen. But you can't win them all, I guess. Alex Windsor's great. She just looks to be at a different level. I'm kind of cooling a little bit on Queen Aminata. Not that she's not good, but I think she may have been exposed to the point you can see some holes in her game. I'd still push her over either Blue or Starks, but I don't know that she's like she's a champion level performer at this point. So that's just something I'm keeping in mind, something I'm thinking about. I guess that's my brief thoughts on the show. Mercedes Moné cut a decent promo. I do not know what is going on with Chris Statlander. I feel like that they've kind of, it's been too much of this for too long, like just kind of directionless. I feel like both Willow and Chris have been de-emphasized on TV. And I understand why, because you had the Toni Storm storylines, you had the Mercedes Moné storylines, and then after that, it could be kind of hard to fit a third women's storyline onto AEW, how they structure their TV, but I would argue that those two are worth it, that you find the time. I wonder if they're just kind of wasting time till they get the women's tag championships active before they push these two full-fledged. I don't know. Honestly, I keep forgetting that's going to be a thing that happens. And yeah, I mean, that was about it. Adam Page, I thought, came off well. They're using him well. I think that attendance for AEW is kind of their big question mark right now. Let's see if I can get a number real quick. So according to Cage Match, the attendance for this week's Dynamite was just over 3,000. If you go back to their last time in the Cleveland, do a little typing on the air, good stuff. Last October, they had 3,487, so a drop of like 400 some. I think that could probably be viewed as a touch disappointing. Now, last time was a named Dynamite that they put a lot of force behind. And it also included a Rampage taping, which, whatever, you know, who cares? Doesn't mean anything. You know, 40 weeks later, I don't know that you want to. You know, maybe it's just the fact that, like, AEW's got the good vibes, but not, the business has not caught up with that yet. Maybe that's the kind of a leading thing for them at this moment. And maybe the metrics will catch up. I don't think it's smart to make any kind of knee-jerk reaction to this one attendance and say, oh, we got to get the belt off Adam Page. I don't think you have a better option at this point right now. I don't see anything in the AEW cards that is guaranteed to heat up attendance for AEW TV shows. But that's the big question, is the TV shows. What are you going to do with them? And how are you going to get their attendance up? I don't know that they found a good answer to it. I mean, I don't think that's their biggest issue. Again, I'll go back to the corporate discussion I had earlier. You know, I think that there should be a lot of concern in AEW right now about the fact that WWE's just keeps getting these deals. They're making it harder for AEW to get any deals. And I think that's really secondary to the whole, how can they ever, you know, I'm not delusional about them possibly ever, but certainly in no rush are they. They are nowhere close to catching up with WWE, like, business-wise, you know. Dave Meltzer's doing his numbers on max viewership, and, you know, I think he thinks it's rather close to what Raw is getting, I guess. I'm kind of, that's something I need to dig further into. I think that's, but I mean, you know, that's a big feather in their cap if the max numbers are accurate, and that's the big question mark. But I think that, you know, that's not really the big story. The real big concern for them is going to be getting these deals, these corporate deals, these deals with content providers to get them to reward them, you know, to financially support them. And that's really where AEW's focus has to be over the next couple of years, is getting those huge 8-figure contracts, 9-figure contracts to keep them financially viable, and, you know, debating these shifts in a 0.17 to a 0.15 in the key demo on TV, or debating, like, their Cleveland attendance is down 400, you know, year, or not year over year, but taping over taping, 50 weeks, 50-ish weeks later. it's really got to be those big, or 40, sorry, those big deals, and they have to do it. They have to get the deal going. So it's on them. It's on them to step it up, and here's hoping they do, because I just think they're a vastly superior product to what WWE does. I've been watching a fair bit of WWE, trying to get caught up, working on my FSM 50, and it's miserable trying to watch anything that they put out, really. Even the good stuff, like, it's just this whole candy coating of, how do I want to put it, artifice, just nonsense. And I know it's pro wrestling, but like, there's a certain WWE nonsense artifice that I just find really off-putting, and it's frustrating as a fan. And my biggest fear is, you know, we're like, I've talked about this before, it's a proxy war right now between like TNA and AAA, even though that's officially part of WWE now, and all this. And the absolute worst outcome for professional wrestling is just pro wrestling globally just becoming WWE, because it's the worst version of pro wrestling, in my opinion. And it's just not an enjoyable watch. That's my take. There's stuff that is good sometimes, but overall, it's just really meaningless. It's within a world of low art, it is arguably the lowest. Without getting into some, like, we booked MAGA Butcher, you know, kind of thing, against Drake Younger in a light tubes and QAnon quotes match or something. Anyways, those are my big thoughts on it. I just wanted to do a quick update while I could. Shout out to everyone for listening. Thanks for giving us your time. Appreciate it. And I hope you all are having a great... I'm doing this on a Friday afternoon. Lord knows when you'll get to hear it. But yeah, I don't know if we'll be able to do a show next week. I'll be traveling some, but maybe the week after. Anyways, hope you all are having a great time. Oh, yeah, there is one thing I want to talk about before I finish up, which is the Forbidden Door pay-per-view, which it's definitely not Forbidden lineup. You know, you can talk about how Forbidden Door is not what it once was. The AEW fan base is not what it once was, but we got ourselves basically four confirmed matches. Now, one of them is going to be a four-way for the TBS title, and it's going to have Alex Windsor, Mercedes Moné, and then someone from CMLL for someone from Stardom. That's a Forbidden Door match. Fine. Your other four are Hiroshi Tanahashi against someone. Forbidden Door match. The Hurt Syndicate against whoever wins this, either FTR or Brodito, in a tournament that had no outside presence. Not a Forbidden Door match. Okada versus Swerve Strickland. Okada's been over here for too long. That's not a Forbidden Door match. And Athena versus Toni Storm. Not a Forbidden Door match. Yeah, I mean, we can't pretend that Ring of Honor is meaningfully something different, you know, than AEW. We just can't. We can't. And so, with all this, you know, is this actually going to have anything close to a Forbidden Door aspect to it? I hope so. I'd love to see, like, if we're going to do this as a thing, let's do it as a thing, you know? It just can't be this... Because, like, what they've got announced, like, it's not bad by any stretch. I'm pretty excited for Okada Strickland, and Athena and Toni Storm could be good. The rest, I don't know, man. They got to get something on this that gives it some juice. I'd love to see other representation. Just need to actually see that. All right, anyways. Okay, that was what I wanted to say, just how disappointing the card is right now for Forbidden Door from that perspective. It's very early. We got time. Got don't have that much time now that I actually look at a calendar and see how dates work. That's 16 days. You got 2 weeks, buddy. Let's get this going, Tony. Come on. All right. That's it. That is officially it. Y'all take care. Have a great week. Or 2 weeks. Or however the hell long it is till we sit down and do something again. Take care of yourselves. Bye now.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voice of Wrestling Network.
Wrestling Omakase is back, baby. The weekly podcast that takes you across all the top promotions on the entire Japanese wrestling scene, from New Japan to Stardom, Noah, DDT, All Japan, Mari Gold, Dragon Gate, Tokyo Joshi, Sendai Girls, and a whole lot more. I'm John Carroll, a fan of Japanese wrestling for over 20 years, and every week I'm joined by a rotating cast of guest co-hosts as we break down all the top promotions in Japan, men's and women's. Check out Wrestling Omakase right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network today.